there's a lot of hobbies that people don't like to talk about. But that's something else. We will not get into that. However, there are hobbies. No, really, the hobby tells a heck of a lot about you. And if your hobby is standing among a lot of colored lights with a loud disco playing at full blast, it says a lot about your brain power. It does. I mean, you may not want to have it say it, but it does. I don't make the news. I'm only reporting it, friend. I mean, if your hobby, on the other hand, is competing with Bobby Fischer in imaginary chess games, that says something about you, too. And these are all, you know, well, I don't care what you do one way or the other. The point is, if you do these things, whatever it is your hobby, and everybody has one, you know, one way or another. It's even if your hobby is just sitting in the corner looking mad, that is a hobby with a lot of people. It really is. Now, for example, here's a guy with a truly 20th century hobby. I mean, is Santa Clara, California. Of course, California is where the 20th century was actually created. Large parts of New York. No, I'm serious. New York is one of the most reactionary parts of the country. New York clings to its old ways harder than any other city in the country. That's one of the reasons we're in such trouble. Yeah, we cling to the 19th, early 20th century ideas. Little narrow streets we cling to the early 20th century ideas of laissez-faire. Laissez-faire meaning any time a truck wants to park sideways on 49th Street and block up traffic for 2 hours, he can do it. I mean, that's laissez-faire, triple parking and all. That kind of life was the kind of hullabaloo that was common in London in the early 19th century. You know, did you know that they had incredible traffic jams in London in the early 19th century? Of course, that was before they had traffic rules. But they had a hell of a lot of guys driving carts and handsome carriages and riding on horses and walking and pushing things. Millions of people. It got to the point sometimes, yeah, there are accounts where the traffic was so bad in London in the 1830s that it would take a man 3 days to cross the town. Serious. He stayed at inns on his way across the town. It was such an unbelievable hassle. You didn't know that, did you? Well, and not only that, the pollution was so bad, and I'm talking about air pollution, not sewage, air pollution. I'm talking about industrial pollution, like air, that there were times when for months on end, a resident of London did not see the sun. That's right. So along came the rules and the regulations, you see, and slowly traffic began to unsnarl. And each one was fought as it went, incidentally. Every time they put another regulation in, it was fought tooth and nail by the natives, who considered this an unconscionable infringement on their public and private rights. And so gradually they had to do it, you see, because it was just completely... And then they had a fire. You know what started it? They had a giant fire, and thousands of areas of houses burnt down, and none of the fire trucks could even get there. I mean, they couldn't even get into it. And so at that point, they decided maybe they better have a few rules, and gradually they began to evolve the traffic system we have today. Now, in other parts of the country, are you aware that other parts of the country, they're so far advanced in traffic, they make New York look like medieval Venice, which it closely resembles, by the way. That likes to consider itself the art capital and the thinking capital and the literary capital of the world, but on the other hand, it's also the traffic jam capital of the world, the pothole capital of the world, the cigar butt and the gutter capital of the world, and one thing and another. It takes sometimes to get in and out of this city, it takes, sometimes an hour and a half just to get into the city. I mean, from the mouth of the tunnel. Now, that is unheard of in most of the rest of the parts of the country, where there are vast numbers of cars, too. In fact, more cars than we have today here, because many of the parts of the country don't even have mass transit like we have here. So we the laissez-faire attitude in New York is just simply if a store guy wants to bring in a giant tractor trailer and unload for 3 hours on 36th Street, he does it. That city blocks traffic for miles. He didn't give a damn. That's true laissez-faire. You know that in other cities, I'll give you an example. Do you know the one major city in the country does not allow deliveries to stores during the daytime hours? How do you like that? All deliveries are made after 8 o'clock at night. I think it's 8 or 10 o'clock at night, and before 7 in the morning. Can you imagine them doing that in New York? No way. That's because no one would, you know, it's laissez-faire. It's 19th century. This is a very interesting city that way. And so the clinging to the past has caused New York to become one of the least efficient cities in the world, unfortunately. Efficient in the sense that if business-wise, for example, many businesses are leaving New York not because of the taxes, but because they can't even get their stuff anymore. It takes 3 days to get a shipment from Fort Lee, New Jersey, which is, right across the river, just to get it in here. And so guys are leaving and going to places like Gainesville, where you can get your shipment in 8 minutes. So, I don't know, we are living in this medieval place. And it's like a giant warren. And many of the things that are happening here are the things that happened in the medieval places. For example, do you know that one of the side issues of medievalism was vast urban violence? The footpad was the most common character to be seen on the streets in Renaissance and medieval towns. You didn't know this? Do you think that came along with the Mayor Wagner? Are you kidding? Oh no, the footpad was, and in London, the footpad became even a subculture. What do you think Dickens was writing about? Oliver Twist was a classic example of that. Why did they call them footpads? Well, the footpad, they wore padded shoes so that you couldn't tell that they were coming up behind you. That's why many muggers in our time wear tennis shoes and wear sneakers, you see, so you don't hear them coming up, and they can run like hell. Now, the medievalism of our city is fascinating to me. Medieval in the sense that, and by the way, another thing that was medieval was the guilds. Have you noticed this city is practically guilds? What were guilds? Unions. Of course. I always have to translate. The guilds were the unions of the medieval ages, and the cities became actually in the grip of guilds. And sounds familiar, doesn't it, gang? I've heard many a union guy say on the air, without even thinking that people would resent it, he says, "I'll have to close this city down. My union will close the city down unless our demands are met." Wow, that's fascinating. Speaking of robber barons. However, that's in the same. It's in the old tradition, you see. So the medievalism of our city is one of the most fascinating sides of the city, and I don't think anybody's ever written a major piece on that. That our city is one of the last of the cities that clings to old things. It fights, say, for example, slum clearance, because it's considered, somehow it fights knocking down old houses along Hudson Street. We must preserve our past, they say, as if that's something to be preserved. Thousands of rat-infested warrens must be preserved at all costs. So it's caused our city, in the end, and I'm not anti the past, I'm merely saying that it's caused our city to become one vast, decaying, medieval in the sense that, that many of the buildings in this town were built, I'm talking about buildings that people live in, were built around the time of the Civil War. You didn't know that? Well, there's one fire station that I know of downtown in New York here. The firehouse was built. The firehouse, it's a working firehouse, 1861. And it was built as a firehouse in 1861. So that's, and I'm not, I'm not saying there's any more, but it's unbelievably inefficient in today's world. Because of a number of reasons. For example, bricks keep falling on guys' heads, for starters. But they have to prop it up. A lot of other problems of that type, and not to mention the cockroach problem. However, the clinging to the past in New York is part, I suppose, of the charm of New York, on one hand. On the other hand, it's one of the reasons why New York has become almost impossible to operate. It would be as if you decided you were going to drive to work every day in a 1918 Willie's Night. A great idea, isn't it? Except for one reason. The Willie's Night of 1918 broke down on an average of every 15 minutes and had to be repaired. In addition to that, the tires on the Willie's Night blew out every 12 and a half miles. And so ultimately, driving to work every day in a Willie's Night would be an impossible problem, unless it was 1918 and everybody else was driving to work in a Willie's Night. So the problem of obsolescence is one of the major problems facing New York City. And I'm talking about physical obsolescence. And it clings to old-style politics, too, which are ethnic-oriented. In other words, instead of being city-oriented, they're ethnic-oriented. So you have this group wants this group wants that, and this group wants that, and ultimately no group gets anything. It winds up canceling itself out. And this is another old-style idea. Back years and years ago, 100 years ago, maybe 50 years ago, every city was that way. So the Irish vote was important in Chicago, or the Polish vote was important here and there. But it's only in New York where that's remained a really big operating entity. Again, it's a holdover from the past when the people didn't consider themselves Americans. They considered themselves Polish or Italian or whatever it might be. And they wanted their thing. And the hell with the Poles. The hell with the Swedes. They wanted their thing. So there still remains elements of that in other parts of the country, but that's largely disappeared in most parts of the country. Here it's flourishing, just as medievalism in a way is flourishing. The guilds, the foot pads at night, it's all part of that. In a very real sense, much of the medieval corruption, which was very common, cross thy palm with silver, magistrate, was the phrase. and this is very common in a city like New York, much more common than we want to admit it. In fact, whole TV series are being created on it called Serpico. It's based on corruption. it's a fascinating town. And don't, as Earl Wilson always says, don't get me wrong, I love it. But you have to look at it in the face. And once you travel around a great deal, I don't think most New Yorkers travel much to other cities, unless they're resort cities. The average New Yorker will go to Miami. Or he will, and by the way, he'll be flown there, take a limousine to the beach, and he thinks he's really visiting a city. But you'll find that other cities have recognized the problems of today. And they've decided that medievalism doesn't pay any longer in this age, in this time. What is part of the medieval? What do you relate to the medieval life, average life? Well, for one thing, the medieval cities were incredibly filthy. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Now, that meant that everybody in a medieval city did not consider himself part of a city, but he was living in his own cell. And so he would nearly throw his garbage out. Have you been along Sixth Avenue recently? So the medieval quality of this city is fascinating to me. At the same time, the medieval city was filled with artists, who were usually living in a little colony, the artist. And he was part of the medieval world. And the medieval world, and of course there were always great religious battles that went on in the medieval world. And we've had a few here in this town. This is WOR New York. We'll be back after this barrage of medieval pitches. Do you find this interesting, this parallel with New York and the medieval world? This is a medieval city in many respects. You see, another thing, too. We use the word progress loosely in this country, and we use it without really stopping to think what it means. We like to think we're all in the 20th century. We are in the 20th century. This is 20th century, right? This is 1976. Well, chronologically, we are. But in actuality, many parts of the country are not yet living in the 1976, and many other parts of the country are living already in 1995. In other words, You know, when you talk about a century, you know, we talk about the Victorian age. Well, in England, for example, the Victorian age did not, it was not a uniform thing. The age of Victoria, what we all associate with Victorian art, Victorian mores, Victorian attitudes, did not hit the country all at one time. In fact, it spread over the country, and sometimes in many of the parts of England at the time of the Victorian age, we're still living in the age of the medieval, Middle Ages, or close to it. So you could say to somebody, you know, you could go down to a town in England, a little town in the southern part of England, and say, you're living in the Victorian age. He's not. He's living in the age of, Richard II. I mean, in his daily life. Now, in America, see, we tend to think America's, no, we're out of that. All that stuff is the past. Not so. For example, I'll give you a classic example. Chicago, one of the reasons Chicago is more efficient than New York is that Chicago is probably the closest city to living in 1976 of any city of a major size in the country, with the possible exception of another curious city, Minneapolis. Now why? Well, it's because the residents of both of those cities recognized early on in the game that we were entering, whether we liked it or not, we were entering the automotive age. And so they made preparations early in the century for that. And so they tore down all the old little narrow streets, and they put great freeways and avenueways that go into those cities. So the traveling in and out of those cities is like a breeze, you see. Not only that, but it makes the entire rest of the city operate better. It's cleaner, for one thing, curiously enough. We would think it would be the reverse, but it isn't. These are cleaner cities, by and large, than New York. And because, you see, we are in the automotive age, but we fight it. And so the automotive age that we are in is definitely here. Any of you have tried to go through the Holland Tunnel at any time of the day, know we're in the automotive age, whether you like it or not. It's here. So you have your choice. Either you go with the fact you're in this age, or you fight it. If you fight it, of course, then you're bringing incredible problems on yourself that you can't really deal with. And so New York is a medieval city living amidst, or let's say a neo-medieval city is better the way to put it, a neo-medieval city living amidst in a country really where there are other great cities that are not medieval. They're living in the urban age. We're not living in the urban age really. We're living in the medieval hive age. It's not the same as the urban age. And so the problems of New York, I think, are problems of what part of the century we're living in, actually living in. Not the chronological living, but the actual way of life that we live in. It's fascinating when you travel around the country and you can see the vast differences towards time that various parts of the country have. New York is the most nostalgic city in all of the country. It's most hung on the past of any city. Give you an example. Broadway, endlessly, is bringing back its past 50 years ago. Endlessly. You look confused, Barney. Well, you mean you haven't seen what the musicals have been in the last couple of years? Ah. Maybe I always use you as a good sounding board, because when you look confused, then I know I have to explain it further. But no, that's good. That's very good. Seriously, though, they're bringing back Cat on a Hot Tin Rules. That's 25, that's a quarter of a century ago. They're bringing back, Virginia Woolf, which is the mid-50s. That's 20 years ago. They're bringing all this stuff. See, but it doesn't matter. You can bring specifics out. But it's been a whole wave going all the way back to the 1920s musicals that were a big deal here in this country, not in this country, in New York, about two seasons ago, but there are hundreds of them. Now, if the rest of the country were to do this, we would consider that old-fashioned and out of date. In New York, we consider it commercial nostalgia. We don't think of ourselves as out of date. Take this mess of Times Square. What's that? Oh, hell's a poppin'. That was not Jerry Lewis. Oh, Jerry Lewis is going to do hell's a poppin'? Well, okay. So that's a classic example. That's a contemporary example of reaching back constantly to the past, always. And it's this city that is primarily involved in that. You hear people, for example, on the radio being interviewed here in this town, endlessly talking about World War II. I hear that, endlessly discussing World War II. And that's 35 years ago. And that's a third of a century ago. And it's still a living thing with many people here. And so, I'm not arguing any philosophical reason for or against this, but the fact that what it ultimately results in is a city, really, that thinks like a city of 1941 thought, roughly. And it fights the changes that have come about in the world since 1941. Well, look at, we're the only city now, we're dead set against the SST coming in. That's a classic example. Ultimately, New York will manage, I think, to finally isolate itself from the entire rest of the country. I think this is what a secret drive we have in our city to do it. It's getting more and more difficult for a person, say, to drive in from New Jersey or Connecticut. Great barriers are being erected until ultimately it's going to cost you $20, maybe, to drive in from Connecticut. In short, we're setting up a kind of medieval wall around us. Now, that was one of the examples of the medieval city. A very important part of the medieval city was the walled part. They walled themselves off from the rest of the world because they felt that the rest of the world was filled with endless dangers and evils and terrible things and flying creatures. One of the things they believed in, flying creatures, by the way. And yes, and so they put walls around their city. Now, we're putting walls. And incidentally, had you asked a medieval person at that time, he would not have thought there was anything dumb and wrong in this. He would have considered this because he's attempting to protect himself from the howling wilderness out there, the evils out there. And they put this big wall around their city. And we're doing it in our own way. We're walling ourselves off in one thing, philosophically a lot. You drive around the country. You even hear in this city, for example, this is the only city where radio stations, the very popular ones too, will play endlessly all day long music of the 40s. You hear that nowhere else in the country. Oh, it's an absolute truth. I'm not in the business, buddy. I know. It's absolutely true. You drive into, the closer you get to New York, the more you hear Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald out of the 40s. You know you're coming into the Big Apple. And because you sort of find yourself slipping back in time, the roads get narrower. Until finally you're in these little narrow streets that are medieval streets. It's like your life consists of going cross town endlessly on 38th Street, which, any 12-year-old kid can spit across. And so, another thing that was very evident in the medieval city, of course, was the aristocratic part of it, too. The medieval cities were always complete with a small enclave of the ruling class, isolated from the rest, living in elegant splendor, and protected by police night and day, which protected their world. And they lived in an enclave, very much like New York does, has this elegant Upper East Side, which is, by the way, patrolled usually by private patrolmen and private police, which protect them from the rest of the howling wilderness of the medieval city they live in. And so, it's fascinating to see us developing these walls, where we're creating walls. Another side of the medieval city, it was a city in a country in itself. It was a country. In other words, the city-state, what I'm getting at. Yes. So if you were a Venetian, you were very different, say, from a Roman or a Milanese, and you often warred against them. How many newscasts have you heard recently where New York is philosophically declaring war on the rest of the country? Oh, constantly. And you travel around the rest of the country, you don't hear that. You don't hear great tirades on the TV or radio and say, we'll just take St. Paul, for example, how the rest of the country is out to sink St. Paul. and how the rest of the country has militated against Minneapolis. But we feel that way because of our medieval walls, our chauvinism, our inbred quality, our sense of danger, which comes from our own footpads. And so in the end, we, like several other cities in the world, and there are several others, we're not the only one, have resisted the 20th century. And ultimately, you know what happens to city-states? Well, it's a sad thing that at one time Venice was the center of the world in Italy, in that whole world. And it isolated itself so completely that ultimately it just drifted off, in a sense, philosophically, out to sea by itself, and now it's just a museum. Yep, that's right. And I think that all the vast movements of businesses from this city and people leaving the city and attitudes of particularly the young people are the ones that are leaving in great droves to go to places like Colorado, places that are grandfathers would never consider going to, and their uncles and their cousins, you know, their fathers would never even consider, just maybe a vacation, you know, that, but just hurrying through. Today, there are vast numbers that are fleeing the city, and this has very important connotations for the future, that ultimately, I suspect, our city, New York, I think it began already in the early 20th century to lose its power as the intellectual center of America. Let's face it, the number one art form of our time is the movies. Well, where are they? Well, that began the early 20th century, you see. Did you know that it began here? That's right. But it fled here quickly for a number of reasons, economic and otherwise. And so ultimately, our city is being slowly isolated from the main streams of what is going on. That's why in this town, old forms are still important. People still talk about harpsichord playing. People still get all excited over the publishing of a book of poems, for example, which is all part of another time, another literary time. And not that I'm against these things, I'm just saying that they're not part of the time much that we live in. And so as the rest of the country moves on, I think you'll find the city will become ultimately the way Venice was. I'm talking about in 100 years, of course. But ultimately, the city will still be, there are people still living in Venice, you know. I understand that they go to work every morning in Venice, too. But as a cultural force, Venice does not really have much clout. If you want to visit the past, you can visit Venice, and it's beautiful. I mean, I've been there. But if you decide you're going to open up a McDonald's, you're in trouble. It's just not part of the culture and the time. They're out of the past, really. Now, it sounds probably to you casually listening that I'm for, doing away with the past. It's not what I'm dealing with here. I'm saying here that there are certain physical things that ultimately become outmoded. One of the physical things that we've outmoded is the outhouse. People don't have them anymore. Okay? Certain things are outmoded, such as the gondola canoe to go to work in. We don't have that anymore. People simply don't go to work in New York in hansom carriages much anymore. And this is one of the few cities that still remains with working hansoms. I think that's significant. Our cabs, for example, are the dirtiest in the nation. No question about it. The cabs and the whole form of traumatic communication and transportation in the city is among the most medieval of all, and it's a fascinating thing to see. I think in 300 or 400 years people will come as they come to Venice now, and they will write by the romantic Mary McCarthy's of the future will write books called New York Visited in the Springtime as a museum. There'll be pictures of these ancient buildings. And people will still live here. But I think that we are isolating ourselves with walls of tariffs, philosophical walls, and ultimately the city will, sadly enough, drift away because we will not give up the 19th century here in New York. We simply won't. We Boss Tweed could get elected today. That's right. And probably has been in the last 4 or 5 years here in New York several times. And but New York is proud of it. You see, that's the thing that bothers me. New York is proud of the fact that it has little narrow streets that you can't drive on. Or anything. The trucks can't. Nothing can move. It's proud of this. It's preserving our heritage. Well, is our heritage dirt? Crime? Is our heritage, you might say, emotional and communications and transportation constipation, which is what ultimately, by the way, that ultimately strangled the medieval city. It simply died because no one could move in it. It became a vast rabbit warren of quarreling people, and vast fires would sweep the medieval cities, and the great slums grew, incredible slums. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And group was pitted against group in the medieval cities. Gangs were very, you know, that the gang was created in the medieval city. I'm talking about the robber gang. Oh, yeah. Okay. Another thing that began to trouble the people in the medieval city was a slow sense of strangulation and personal stifling. And I know many of my friends here in New York are beginning to slowly feel stifled in the city now. And they clutch at things to make them feel that they're out. That's why plants are selling like crazy in New York, to try to pretend somehow there is something green and growing. Pet stores have proliferated like crazy, but not so in Minneapolis. Well,